It was really befitting that I ended up accepting to learn about David Grandison Fairchild, who was the father of foreign plant introduction. I start by a quote by Elizabeth Kay, who was a friend of his and a neighbor in Miami, who said of him, he was mycologist, entomologist, plant pathologist, geneticist, administrator, plant explorer, extraordinary, author, and above all, humanitarian. That's what she said of him. He was born in 1869 at Michigan State Agricultural College. When he was 10, his father was appointed the head of Kansas State College of Agriculture, and they moved there. He graduated from Kansas State in 1988 and moved to Iowa State College of Agriculture, where his uncle, Professor Byron Holstead, was a botanist and horticulturist. So they said of him, he was studying the contrivances which flowers develop to ensure their cross-pollination by bees and other insects. Then when his uncle, Byron Holstead, was moved to Rutgers College, he moved with him as a postgraduate student. And in the laboratory, he said, I became deeply interested in a collection of plants which I was making, and I began to think of a future career. So while he was there, Beverly Galloway from the section of plant pathology at the Department of Agriculture came to visit his uncle, and he offered him a position to join him in Washington and become an employee for the government in plant pathology at $1,000 per year, and he accepted. He was there for 4 years, and then he resigned because he had been looking for ways to study in Europe, and he had gotten funding to go to the Naples Zoological Station in Italy. Funding means, you know, funding for only the experimentation there. But he had to pay for his own way. On the boat, he met Barbara Lathrop, a world traveler from Chicago who was very wealthy, and he said that was his destiny. He didn't think that he made an impression on Barbara Lathrop. But a few weeks later in Naples, Barbara Lathrop came to visit him and offered to fund his trip to Java. But he didn't think he was ready at the time. He spent a few more years working in and learning in Europe before he accepted the offer in 1896 to go to Java. Okay, he was contacted by a colleague from the USDA while he was in Europe to go to Naples, Corsica, and get the limon from there that was used in the candied peel is used. So he goes to Naples, Corsica, and he has his camera and he's taking pictures, and he gets arrested by a police officer. And so he didn't know what to do. They could not communicate. He didn't speak the language. So he took a $15 reimbursement check that was not that he had not cashed, and he just branded it, and then the police officer let him go. But he told him, you leave right away. But he did not. He just collected four small bud sticks of citron fruits. He stuck them in pommes de terre, in potato, and then shipped them to D.C. This is probably incorrect, but it is incorrect that the cutting strengthened California's citron market for the next 20 years. Is that correct or incorrect?
Never a substantial citron market. There were a few growers that, until an orange from Brazil arrived, of course, that arrived in the 1870s to Washington and Naples, which is the basis of California's industry.
Right.
Getting way back. An error in that book.
Yes. So there is a lot written about Fairchild. Some of it is, you know, is not correct. So please help me make sure that whatever I say is going to be correct. So then, first trip to the Malay Archipelago in 1896 was sponsored by Barbara Lathrop, and there he spent 8 months studying how termites build colonies at Java's Botanical Garden. And then Lathrop came, and then he convinced him to quit and then travel with him. So they were just floating aimlessly. He was not happy about that, and they were getting on each other's nerves initially. Until, apparently, 1897, the night of New Year's Eve, he agreed to study plants useful to man and finding a way to bring them to the U.S. So that was the beginning of his passion for exploring for plants and bringing new crops to the United States. So after his return to Washington, D.C. in 1897, he roomed with Swingle, and they discussed a future as agriculture explorers. They were not called agriculture explorers at the time. They were called special agents. So they they convinced the Secretary of Agriculture, James Wilson, in 1898 to divert money from the Department of Agriculture budget for seed distribution to form the Office of Seed and Plant Introduction, which Wilson agreed to. And later on, the Congress endorsed the idea and appropriated $20,000 to the new office. He was very unhappy, through with the deluge of seeds obtained from Hansen, and it was only him working on all of that. So when Lathrop, about a year later, came to visit him in D.C. and offered to sponsor a collecting trip around the world, he took the offer and left the office, and Wilson was very upset about that. But he managed to obtain a formal letter with a gold USDA seal so that he can collect and bring things. So this is very compact, so I'm not going to be telling you about all of that. I highlighted the fruit crops because it's with the American Pomological Society as a special agent, which later became agriculture explorer, on the expedition with Barbara Lathrop, that Barbara Lathrop actually funded everything for the next about 6 years. In Trinidad, he collected the first mangoes, his first mangoes, which included the Gordon, the Peters number one, and the Père Louis. And I understood that only the Gordon made it, survived later on, and he grew it. And then he also, from Panama, the Chinese calamondin orange. So in that trip, they did South America, as you see there. He collected from Chile the first avocado, and there is also controversy there. It is told that this is the ancestor to the current Fuerte and Hass avocado, but when I dug into it, I don't think it is correct. But it was a hardy Chilean avocado that he collected and introduced. From Chile, he went on muleback to Argentina, and his mule almost slipped, but he managed to make it. And from Argentina, he collected the spineless cactus. And when Burbank said that he developed spineless cactus, Fairchild was very unhappy about that. And he said, you know, I have already sent the spineless cactus, and they exist in the U.S., so you could not have bred the spineless cactus, according to Fairchild. From Brazil, he got the Itamaraco mango. And then in Italy, he went, in Padua, Italy, he went to a monastery and got the Sultanina rose, which is the seedless raisin grape. He was also fascinated by crops from Egypt. At the time, all of the things that he collected were not fruit crops, and there is a list right there. Then between January and August of 1900, he went to Southeast Asia, and he loved that area. From New Guinea, he got the shaddock seed, and in the Philippines, the carabao mango, and in Bangkok, the seedless pomelo. He contracted typhoid fever and had to leave on a stretcher to Southampton in the UK. He was very ill there. Then he came back to the U.S. where Galloway again hired him. Apparently the beer in the U.S. was not very good at the time, so he wanted him to go and investigate in Bavaria how do they do their beer and their varieties of barley and hops. So there he befriended the growers because they didn't want to give him anything. And by befriending them, somebody ended up giving him the Hannah barley and the Saaz and Red Sems hops, important varieties that he brought to the U.S. On his way to Egypt and North Africa to collect dates, he stopped in Italy and got Istrian and filbert, Sean, and then grape and carob from Lisa, English walnut, olive, lemon. He believes that he introduced the first PFAS-budded pistachio trees, the Colla Giant seedless lemon, and then the seedless grapes that produce the Zante currants. This is an image of the sausage tree he introduced. This is growing in Florida. It was growing in Florida with him sitting under it. From Malta, he got the blood orange and the Lumi Larang orange. And in Malaga, Spain, he collected fig, Jordan almonds, and the Vera carob. Okay, and then again with Lathrop, another Asian trip between 1901 and 1902. In Canton, Lathrop would not go with him, so he'd go by himself up the river, where he collected the Lanfan peach, persimmon, and olive. He was really fascinated. He loved mangoes. They were his second most favorite fruit after the mangosteen. So from India, he got six varieties, including the Douglas Bennett Alphonse mango. He arranged for the introduction of the Keta nectarine and the Gulabi grape from the land of the Afghans then. In Saigon, he collected mangosteen and then the Cambodiana mango. What he did, he was in a hurry. He hired half a dozen boys, asked them to eat the mangoes, and then that's why he was able he was able to get the seeds and ship them. And then in Japan, that's where he met Lathrop. He collected the, or he introduced the Nagi fruit. I don't know if you call it Nagi or Nagi, the Tanaka loquat, and ordered a shipment of 30 flowering cherries, none of which made it at the time. They were sent to California, and they did not, the first shipment did not make it. Now, then they went on another trip to Africa, where he collected the Kaffir orange, and in South Africa, the Carissa plum. He loved the personal-sized pineapple, and he thought that they have potential, but they ended up not having potential in the U.S. Okay. Went back again to Washington, D.C., where he met Gilbert Grosvenor, who was the editor of the National Geographic Society magazine, who invited him to come and address the society about his trip to Baghdad. There he met Alexander Graham Bell, whose daughter was Grosvenor's wife. And he was invited to Bell's Wednesday evening events. Those were very popular social events, and that's where he met Bell's daughter, Marion, who ended up becoming his wife. During that time, he toured the U.S. and visited a lot of plant experimenters like Felix Gillet, who were testing plants sent by the Office of Seed and Plant Introduction. As I said, he married Marion Bell in April of 1905. At the time, Peters was the head of the Office of Plant Introduction, and he convinced him to hire Frank Meyer as a plant explorer for China. Then he bought a 40-acre lot in Chevy Chase here and planted, he ordered his first 125 Japanese flowering cherry trees. In April 1906, he still really wanted to introduce mangosteen. He planned a plant introduction garden in Panama with Dr. Gorgas and established it for mangosteen trials, but that didn't end up surviving. Then finally, he was appointed in charge of the Office of Seed and Plant Introduction. It went from a section to an office, which was higher on the scale. Then he was the head of the office between April 1906 and October 1933. In 1907, he received shipment of the drooping cherry. So he really promoted the flowering cherries and ordered 300 to give away to all the schools, all the public schools in the District of Columbia. And then he broke, since we are in Washington, D.C., he brokered the gift from Tokyo's mayor of 2,000 sakuras, or flowering cherries, to the U.S., but the first shipment, the 1909 shipment, was all burned. There was a lot of problem. Initially, he resisted the Quarantine Act. But after he found out that the blight that caused the chestnut blight was introduced through the Chinese chestnut, then he relented later on. He convinced Mr. Bell and Grosvenor to always to serve some of the new introductions. So they served new dishes made with the Office of Seed and Plant Introduction at Mr. Bell's Wednesday evenings and at some of the annual banquets of the National Geographic Society, things like the Daglet Noor dates, the West Indian dashines, the chayotes, and the preserved jujubes. And in 1908, he inaugurated a bulletin called The Plant Immigrants that he was very, very proud of. And until 1924, there were 210 numbers, 210 bulletins that were produced by the office. So as I said, the Quarantine Act was passed by Congress in 1912 and halted the unrestricted flow of plants. In 1916, he and Marion purchased a piece of land in Coconut Grove, Florida, and they built a house called the Kampong, which is village in Malay. And he was awarded many awards, including one of an honorary PhD from Oberlin College. In 1918, after Meyer, his dear friend, died, he left 1,000 for the office to do a bonfire, remembering him, but Fairchild decided to put that money for a medal. And the first recipient of the medal was Barbara Lathrop. He was very personable, I guess, and he made friends with a lot of very wealthy people, including Alison Armour, who outfitted a cargo ship for experimentation, and they named it the Utawana. And he went on it with a lot of other scientists around the Mediterranean, the coast of Africa, all over. By the time he retired in 1933, he had introduced more than 80,000 accessions. After he retired, Colonel Robert Montgomery founded the Fairchild Botanical Garden in Miami. He gave it a Fairchild name to honor his friend. And then there was another expedition that was sponsored by Anne Archbold to islands between Borneo and New Guinea between 1939 and 40. It lasted only a year because of the war at the time. He was a prolific writer. He wrote 4 books and about 400 articles, and he died at the Kampong in 1954. He has many legacies, some of which, the mango, I understood that the Cambodiana that he introduced was used in breeding, and it's in the background of Alice Herman and Florigon. The Carabao mango supposedly assisted in the spread of mango and the development of important Florida cultivars. The Tommy Atkins and Kent that were developed in Florida and are being grown outside. The Keta nectarine has been also used heavily in breeding new nectarine cultivars in the U.S. through Le Grand. So I cannot but mention the Sakura, and this is here around the tidal basin. I want to end with a quote from his granddaughter, Helen Pankhurst, who said, his motto was, "Never be satisfied with what you know, only with what more you can find out."